is it? How'd we do? I think it was close.
That was
That'll work.
That was great. Welcome to the Commander and MTG podcast, everyone. I'm Phil DeLuca, and my fellow hosts are...
Nate Burgess.
Sean Kirkpatrick-Watson.
We're your friendly neighborhood Commander community-oriented podcast, and we will put a spotlight on the goings-on of the EDH Commander community. Each episode, we will talk about topics you want to hear about and focus on listener contributions. Remember to check us out on Twitter at Commander and MTG and talk to us there. Remember, we have three banned topics here on Commanderin, and I want everybody to remember this.
Mm-hmm.
We never talk about religion, politics, or Hearthstone.
Amen to that, brother.
I had to tamp down my laughter because we had a very special introduction this week. This episode was actually inspired by a Twitter conversation and will be focused on etiquette. We have a special guest. He's the co-host of the Command Zone podcast, professional politicker, and the exemplar of etiquette, Josh Lee Kwai.
How's it, partner?
All right.
It's weird to put those two things together.
Oh, yeah, it's great. We are tickled pink about that. And I really appreciate your singing us in. It felt wonderful. You and Nate doing a little duet there.
Mm-hmm.
I feel happy that I witnessed such a momentous musical event.
I feel bonded to Nate now.
All right.
Not so much to the rest of you guys, sorry.
I believe that's called soul bound.
That means next time we play, Nate, me and you, right? Me and you.
You're my Deadeye Navigator.
The next step, of course, is a restraining order against Nate, but, you know.
We'll worry about that, you know.
Exactly. These are inevitable.
We'll cross that bridge when we come to it.
So, Josh, thank you for coming on. Like I think I'm having a strange sense of deja vu here.
Oh, I didn't know we were going to talk about that and how my technical difficulties screwed us up the first time.
Oh, it's all right. It happens, and we have an opportunity to go back and try it again, and this time bring it in full stereo sound. No, not stereo sound. It'll be mono to our listeners.
But we can do it even better the second time.
Even better.
Thanks a lot for having me, guys. It's really great to be here. I've listened to all your episodes so far, so I'm a big fan.
Excellent. Excellent. We're big fans of yours, too. We are inspired in part by what you and Jimmy do. And yeah, we listen every episode. It takes me a little bit sometimes because I don't have as long a commute or as much time to listen to podcasts as I used to. But we're big fans and very grateful you came on. And thanks for having us on to announce our podcast when we launched it. Now it'll be 7 episodes ago.
Wow, crazy. Forever ago. It was cool to have you on and to get you out there. Jimmy and I were also fans of the Five Commanders podcast. So I'm sure this will be the first of many collaborations.
Yay. Well, we hope so.
If there are any Commander and listeners out there that don't listen to the Command Zone podcast, what are you doing? Go download it now. Really the high benchmark of podcasts, especially about our topic. So go check it out.
You can finish listening to this one first, but in the future you can listen to theirs first.
You can just listen to them both at the same time.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and it'll be like that duet that we sang at the beginning. It'll be almost exactly the same as that.
Hey.
Sync up like Pink Floyd and The Wizard of Oz.
Oh, yeah. We could do like some Radiohead collaboration.
Yeah.
And get the timing of the episodes down.
Totally. This is all completely a lie, everyone, but...
This sounds like a very difficult project with a very little payoff.
I was going to say almost impossible. Almost impossible. And of course, but they will have already listened to the Command Zone by the time they get to our episode, because we do have trouble getting our episodes out on Tuesday, don't we?
Well, you haven't. And because of my snafu, technically, my technical snafu earlier in the week, like, I've left you with very little time to get this out by Tuesday. So this week, I take full responsibility.
Well, we'll see. I mean, this will be a perfect recording. There won't be any need to edit any of it. No strange noises, nothing else like that. No crazy buzzes, right?
That sounds like wishful thinking.
It's magical Christmas land in the podcast world.
Perfect for a Commander podcast.
Hey, so there's a question I've been meaning to ask, and I don't even know if I asked this in person, because when we were at the gathering, you guys were pretty busy. Why do you play EDH, Josh?
Why do I play EDH? Well, I got back into Magic fairly recently. I played when it first came out. I played around beta, although I didn't actually own my first cards until Legends. I played with friends' cards until then. And then I saw, like, awesome gold-colored dragons and stuff, and I was like, I need to actually spend my own money on this. And then I fell out of Magic, as many people do, for a while, about 10 years or maybe a little bit longer. And I came back at the very tail end of Innistrad. My nephew had just turned 13, and I was living in Hawaii at the time, which is where he lives, and we were just, you know, I was trying to find something I could do with my nephew, and he's into this kind of thing, so I taught him to play Magic, and before I knew it, I was, like, fully back into Magic. And then when I moved back to LA, I was working at a company called Rocket Jump, a YouTube channel run by Freddie Wong, and who is coincidentally Jimmy Wong's brother. They do the web series, the popular web series Video Game High School that Jimmy is on. And anyway, so turns out Jimmy plays Magic, and he was friends with some other web series creators that created the web series Top Decking, which is a web series about Magic. And those guys play a ton of Commander. So I was just looking for anybody to play any kind of Magic with, and Commander was what they were playing. So of course I dove headfirst into that, and the rest is history.
That's great. I'm glad. I for one, I'm glad that you were surrounded by people who play Commander.
Yeah, it was, it's a really great community. And it's also, you know, I really liked the format because it combined a lot of things I like. One is Magic, and two is the political aspect of multiplayer and social dynamics. So that's just something that I've liked about many different games, from Werewolf to Axis and Allies to Risk and those types of games. And it brings that aspect to Magic. So I really found that compelling, like, from the very first Commander game I ever played.
Right. When I was first playing back in 1994 through 97 or so.
Ask your parents, that was, kids.
That was, yeah, those are the days telephones were mounted on the wall.
True story.
We were playing a lot of multiplayer Magic just using the new rules at the time, right? And the new rules being 60 card decks, four of a kind at most, with and they had just released the restricted list.
Yep.
Where you could only play one of any particular type of card, like a Soul Ring or a
Demonic Tutor, Channel, all that stuff, yeah.
Right, all that stuff, all the really abusive stuff, the Power 9 as well. And so coming back to Commander for me was like, it was just the way I always played Magic, except now I had one-ofs, and they were 100-card decks, which was kind of strange. I love the politics of it.
Yeah, actually, coincidentally, when I started playing, we were the same way. In fact, the playgroup, I literally started playing Magic because there was four of them, but there's five colors in Magic, so they were looking for a fifth guy to play, you know, that fifth color, because they were playing five-player or four-player games, but they really thought it'd be cool to play five-player games with all five colors represented. So they recruited me, and of course, they gave me the green deck, and green was horrible in early Magic. So I just got kicked around for like the first couple months, but of course, I still loved it.
How that has changed so much.
Indeed.
Yeah, people don't really understand how bad green was back in the day, but it was horrible because creatures were just bad, and green is the creature color. And so,
yeah, Crawworm, and that's about it.
I mean, and Crawworm was bad because everybody had a Terror, you know, or a Swords to Plowshares. I mean, those were just very common, that type of card. So you'd play something for six mana, and they would just kill it for one mana.
You can't say Force of Nature is a bad card.
Oh, God, it's a horrible card, although I thought it was awesome. I remember staring at it in the window at the card shop, you know, just looking at it and being like, man, I wish I had $6.50 to buy that thing.
If only I could have an 8/8 Trampler for the bargain cost of 10 mana.
Yeah, plus a huge upkeep cost.
Wait, what? There's an 8/8 Trampler out there? Where do I get one of these?
Now you might pay 6 manas for one.
Yeah,
of those.
Sean, you should play that in all your decks.
Well, it wouldn't fit into the color square for me, that card, so. Mm-hmm.
One thing many of us are asking Josh is, why do you hate your cards?
Oh, here we go.
I mean,
listen, this is the double sleeving thing, I know.
Your cards only ever have one sleeve at a time. Why?
Listen, it's a big step for me just to sleeve them. Like I said, we come from the old school days where we just put the whole deck in a rubber band. So for me to be up to, like, I'm sleeving cards and I'm using a playmat, like, I feel pretty good. Like, I don't think I need to go any farther.
Yeah. Yeah, the advent of playmats was new. I came back and I was like, I don't need a playmat. About 3 weeks later, I had my first playmat.
Yeah, now I have, like, you know, 17 of them. I'm like, where did I get these things?
Yeah, you guys cover your tables with them. I think it's great.
It's like a GP every time we play. It's like, you know, every table is covered with 8 playmats.
Just stop and think of the thousands of dollars worth of cards you used to have chucked in a rucksack with a rubber band wrapped around it.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you guys have told the story. I've told the story really quickly. Like, all my cards were in my parents' basement, and when I taught my nephew to play and moved back to the mainland from Hawaii, my first visit back to home in Oregon, I went down first thing to the basement because I was like, magic cards, I know they're down here. And I found them on a shelf in the corner, and I opened them up, and there had been a flood a few years earlier, and it had totally flooded. They were right under the window that it flooded, and they were just done. They were like basically disintegrated, and I had a box, and it had about 140 dual lands in it.
Oh.
And a Mox Emerald, just dead. So, yeah, I still have nightmares about it. Thanks for bringing that up.
So that story is recently inspired a charity appeal.
I mean, luckily I'm an adult now. I'm doing fine. I did manage. There was one deck that had about 25 dual lands that was on the far end of the shelf and was still salvageable. So I still have some of my old stuff, not a lot of it. But, you know, it's just that those are things that happen in life. It's fine.
Years of therapy will get over that. Now, do you play any games online? Or any Magic online, I should say.
Here we go. Okay, so I do play. I play on MTGO. I mostly draft there. I'm a big drafter, so I draft probably not quite as much as I play Commander, but it's probably close. Like, my Magic playing time is split maybe 60-40 Commander and drafting. So that's what I do when I'm playing online, is I draft, and I just don't find that the social part of the game is as fluid online or as satisfying. And I know people play on other platforms and they run Skype while they do it and all kinds of things, but I find that I don't have a problem, you know, scratching my Commander itch in real life, and so that's just preferable to me.
Can I just for one say that everyone I've ever met playing online is a terrible human being and you'd never get me associating with them?
Yeah. And that's a thing in the plus category, because you guys probably wouldn't even have this show if it wasn't for online games of Commander. So I get it, and a lot of people like it. And, you know, if I had like a bunch of excess time that I was looking to fill with recreation, I would probably look into it. At the moment, I don't have enough of that. So, I mean, there's nights when, like, for instance, last night, a bunch of guys were like, hey, does anybody want to play Commander? And I just couldn't do it, you know, and that was for a paper game, you know. So if I was ever to the point where I was looking to play Magic and I couldn't find games, then I would go there for sure.
I thought maybe it was rooted in your love of politics and your need to read human faces.
I mean, I think it is. Like, part of me, you know, liking the game of Commander is really, like, the politics, the nonverbals, the bluffing, and the, you know, the reading of people. And it's just a lot tougher over the internet. And, you know, I feel like once you put the internet in between me and the person, then it's more about the cards and less about the social interaction, which is still fun, but not quite as satisfying to me.
I think as soon as you get Skype, I think you need an oral or sort of verbal communication. As soon as you get Skype going, you bridge a lot of that gap, though. For example, us three play each other regularly online, and we play with some of our listeners a lot. And I don't feel it's about who runs the highest, you know, the sort of hardest decks or anything like that. There's a lot of politics goes on. Nate.
What? What did I do?
Everything, Nate. Everything.
You learn to read the poignant silences, which is very difficult in Nate's case. So, On your podcast, you mention a lot of the decks that you play. Which, though, is your favorite? Which has that soft spot or occupies that soft spot in your heart?
I have two. One is my Tim deck, my Prodigal Sorcerer deck, which we have broken down in one of the episodes. The Tim is just a 2 and a blue for a 1/1 human wizard, and you tap him to do 1 damage to target creature or player. So that was the first what we call Pinger. There's been a whole bunch printed since. There's a lot in red. And so I built a whole deck around this idea of using Tim multiple times to have a big effect on the game, which sounds ridiculous, but there are ways to do it. Prophet of Krufrix, notably, is a very good way. And then my other one that I really like is I have a Nekusar deck, but I don't have Nekusar as the commander of the deck. I actually turned it into a 5-color deck with Chromat as the general because I wanted access to, mostly I wanted access to white for a lot of board wipes. Because Nekusar just draws a lot of hate when you put him out. Usually you put him out with another effect or something that also damages people when they draw cards. And then you just know the whole table is going to turn towards you. So you usually want to be able to like wipe the board immediately and then do that 2 or 3 more times so nobody can get back at you. So, yeah, those are sort of my two favorites. Tim, because it's very unique and I've never seen another deck exactly like that. And the Nekusar one, because you get to, everybody gets to draw 1 million cards, which always makes for fun games.
Yeah.
That leads into something I want to ask. Something that you do in your deck building that I haven't really seen elsewhere is you make 5-color decks for 3-color commanders. And just thinking through the logistics of that, do you need more tutors? Do you need more, like, tuck protection or, you know, et cetera?
Yeah, what's the reasoning behind that, you mean?
Well, not the reasoning, but just the logistics of of that kind of deck.
How do you prevent you saying, Nekusar, I immediately go, Swords to Plowshares, bye?
Right. The thing about Nekusar specifically is that there are a whole bunch of cards that do what Nekusar does. So I sort of looked at Nekusar as one of those effects. There's Fate Unraveler, there's Underworld Dreams, there's Spiteful Visions, there's a bunch of cards that simulate that effect. So the goal of the deck is really mostly to get people drawing tons of cards. And if Nekusar is not in your command zone staring at everybody, that's fine. Everyone's totally fine with it. Because they don't know, even if they know the deck, they don't know when you've got the Nekusar or it's like. And it's just not as threatening when it's just not staring you in the face on the table. So it's and even with,
so if they don't know the deck, then it's like a decoy.
Yeah, and even if they,
your 5-color commander.
Even if they do, there's this funny thing psychologically where it's just like you don't see it. So they know that it's kind of something they need to worry about, but it's in the future. It's at a point that's indetermined. And so they don't worry about it on the same level. Like once you've got a bunch of stuff out and they're drawing 5 cards per turn, they're like, okay, well, I'll hold up this way to kill Nekusar, or I'll have it handled, no problem. And then I do something that renders that useless, and then all of a sudden they're going to die in a turn if they don't have, you know, a very specific answer. I guess that was my first idea of doing that, and now I've done it a few times. I did it with Marchesa in a Child of Alara deck. And usually I want to do it in a deck that either, well, that two things. I want to need something that's outside of the color pie that that commander offers. So,
sorry, that's, you know, the color square. Just
Sean doesn't recognize.
Okay, the color wheel, whatever. So in Nekusar, I wanted white because I wanted a lot of board wipes. And then I was like, well, there's no 4-color commander, so I'll take green because it does have some things. You know, you got Worldly Tutor from it, so you can find Nekusar. You get Regrowth from it. You get some effects that I'll use. And then the Marchesa deck that I turned into a Child of Alara deck, you know, I wanted green and white because they're the colors that put 1/1 counters on stuff. And they were, you know, it was really smart of them to put Marchesa into Grixis because Grixis doesn't actually have a lot of ways to put 1/1 counters on stuff. So as soon as you move her over into a 5-color deck, then all of a sudden putting 1/1 counters on everything is really easy. Now it's just finding Marchesa that's hard, but at the same time, you gain this ability, this obfuscation that they don't know when you've got Marchesa. And so it's just playing those decks in a very specific way where you're sort of controlling the table and you're doing what you need to do to stay alive until you can all of a sudden drop that key card and then go off and hopefully either win the game or cripple everybody really fast. So that's another reason I really like the obfuscation of it. I really like the, they don't know when you've got your commander exactly.
Yeah, it's very nice. It's that sort of effect that is the reason I run stuff like Sadistic Sacraments and Cranial Extraction in my decks, to go take out the sort of key pieces from someone's deck if it's hidden, or if the worst you're going to get is someone's Prophet Crucifix is exiled from the game before they play it, then you're still onto a win, I think.
Yeah, and you know, it's funny because I hear that all the time. Like, people are just like, well, I'll just do this, or I'll just do that, or I'll just do that. And it's like, yeah, of course.
Easier said than done.
Well, it's not just that. It's of course. It's of course. But everybody says that about every deck. And yeah. you're staring.
You have to actually build the deck and bring it to the table and have it in your hand.
And then you have to look around the table, and this dude's got a Avacyn out, and this dude's got a Scourge of the Throne out, and this guy over here has a Shieldred out, and then you're going to look at me, and I've got like a 2-2 with 2/1/1 counters on it, and I can remove a 1/1 counter to fog. And then you have to go, I'm going to point my Cranial Extraction at you. And it's a lot easier said than done, because you're going to get smashed in the face with Scourge of the Throne if you do that. You know, it's just...
That's where politics say stuff, comes in.
Yeah, yeah, I'm just saying.
So I'm going to remove that Marquesa if you don't attack me with that Scourge, for example.
But there's no Marquesa yet. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, you have to convince your opponent that there is a Marquesa about to come.
So Jean's making deals on future trades.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not saying it never happens. I'm just saying the funny thing is, because, I mean, I play in a play group, then it's a regular group, you know, it's slightly rotating, but there's mm-hmm. probably 8 or 9 people in the group. They all know these decks. It's not fooling anyone 90% of the time. Now, when I go to Vegas and I play among our listeners, oh, they know the deck too, because I talked about it in front of like 10,000 people on a podcast. And so
put a link up.
So everybody knows. And yet they still work. I mean, I'm not saying I win every game, but that's not the goal of playing Commander anyway. Nope. But it is funny how, yes, people have answers in their deck. Of course, they do. They have answers to all the stuff anybody's going to do if they build it right. So it's always about playing the cards.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good answer.
Yeah, that's excellent. Do you see a lot of potential in Magic Origins for your 5-color decks?
I don't know about 5-color decks. There are just a ton of awesome stuff, though, right? I mean, are you guys excited about the set? It seems like it's made for us, right?
Yeah, it is. It's absolutely made for us.
Someone at R&D loves Commander when they wrote this. It's fantastic. Absolutely,
you know,
fantastic.
I really think that the Commander community and the casual community has come such a long way in the last, like, 2 years. And I think that it's very visible how much they're starting to notice us. In the way that the sets are built at this point, and I don't think it's a coincidence that this set feels very Commander heavy. And you know what people said about Modern Masters 2015? They were exclaiming about how many Commander cards there were in that set. And that's not coincidence. Like, I think they realize, like, oh, you know, yeah, we've been catering to the pro player and the competitive player for a long time, but that's like 2% of our player base.
Yeah, looking at the Modern Masters 2015, if you get Elesh Norn, as far as I'm aware, that's not a card that gets a lot of play in Modern as a format.
Barely,
is it?
It might be a one of in like a fringe deck, but yeah, it's not. And same with Iona, which, by the way, I wish they didn't reprint, but it's clearly not made for
second that.
Yeah.
Yeah, there seems to be a hard ceiling on mana costs in those formats.
Yeah,
for the most
three,
part.
Three.
For the
is
most
your number.
Part, yeah. You can get away with four. Most of Modern does not include many things above five. I mean, there would be a Wurmcoil Engine, Batter Skulls. There's a few cards, but in general, like, four is mostly the cutoff. You have to be doing all your powerful things on turn 2 and 3.
I wonder if we're seeing the effect of multi-block planning, though. True multi-block planning, where in this case, kind of starting with Khans of Tarkir, it set up both Modern and a standard environment that allows for much larger creatures and much larger spell effects to come into play. And I think that's an obvious ramp up to Battle for Zendikar, right? I think that's an environment in which there's going to be plenty of mana. You look at Savage Ventmaw, and the only reason Savage Ventmaw really exists is to be able to, you know, second main cast something that starts at 6 mana. And then you've got some mana available already in the form of lands and rocks.
Yeah, I think that's actually a really good point. I think that Battle for Zendikar is something we're building to, but they haven't, like, they can't drastically change standards so that all of a sudden, like, a bunch of stuff that costs 8 and 9 mana, like, is something you can regularly play. And even Savage Ventmaw is not going to see any play. It's just not efficient enough. You know, that card's mostly for our limited environment, I would think. But you're right, Atarka, that's a huge mana cost, and it's saw tons of play. So
right.
It's a really good point. And they've got stuff like See the Unwritten that's that's meant to cheat things into play, which is usually how you're going to get things like Eldrazi out. You know, you're not going to just hard cast them. You're going to have to cheat them into play. And they'll probably, you know, we might see Eldrazi spawn stuff again. I don't know for sure, but, you know, they'll have ways to get those big cards into play, I'm sure.
I think Phil's theory is that that after Balfour's Zendikar, it's going to go to some sort of Eldrazi versus Phyrexian block.
Ooh,
I would not be surprised
to do that. Yeah,
yeah.
The theory isn't
the theory that Nicol Bolas wants the Eldrazi released so that because he thinks that's the only thing that can sort of maybe defeat the Phyrexian or hold him back.
Yeah, that's definitely my theory. I don't know if anybody else has been paranoically considering that. But yeah, my thought is that Nicol Bolas is setting the Eldrazi free in order to destroy the Phyrexians because the Phyrexians represent the only true threat to his power.
Hmm. Look, as an ambassador from Phyrexia, I can tell Mr. Bolas that together we could make sure everything is under our yoke.
He's too wise for that.
Are you an ambassador from Phyrexia or from, like, the Sith?
Yes.
Because I think it sounded sort of Darth-ish.
Darth English.
Is that like the sequel to John English?
Just but with less Mr. Bean.
I do think Sith and Grixis are pretty similar.
Yeah, I think so. I think you see things like, oh God, what nerds. I think you see a lot of red in Darth Maul, right?
Yeah, you do.
And I think you see a lot more blue and black in the Emperor.
Yeah, because, well, anyway, yes, I agree.
Can we move swiftly away from this kind? This is a rabbit hole that once stepped down is hard to come back from.
So, yes, yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
So, all right. All of this was really just set up so that we could talk about the Great Aurora. Josh, that's an awesome card. Can you tell us a little bit about it and how it came to be in your hands?
Oh, right. So the Great Aurora was our spoiler card on the Command Zone for Magic Origins, which was very cool because it was a mythic, or is a mythic, and it was our second spoiler card ever, but our last spoiler card was from the Commander product. So this is our first one from like a quote-unquote real set. So that was an exciting moment for us. I'll read the card. It's 6/3 green for a sorcery. It says, each player shuffles all cards from his or her hand and all permanents he or she owns into his or her library, then draws that many cards. Each player may put any number of land cards from his or her hand onto the battlefield. Exile the Great Aurora. So you take all your permanents in play that you own, shuffle them into the library with your hand, and then count them first. And however many cards that was, you draw that many, and then you just dump the lands out into the battlefield. So
that is absolutely nuts.
And you hope one of your lands is a reliquary tower.
Everyone's so worried about that. I've never worried about discarding cards. I'll just keep the 7 best.
They'll probably come in untapped, and you'll get to do stuff immediately.
Yeah, that's probably. I mean, these are obviously great in like an Omnath deck or a Krufix deck where you can just float like 50 mana and then do it. That seems totally broken. It's also just like a board wipe in green. Green just doesn't have a lot of ways to hit the reset button. So, you know, there's so many games where you're just hopelessly behind, right? Like nothing can save you except for like a total reset of the board. And this does it. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't always have to be like you play this card and then you're in a position where you can win. Sometimes it's fine to play this card and be in a position where you're not going to lose.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, me and Pete the Space Pope were discussing this card last night, and whatever you want to say about it, we both have big old smiles on our face thinking about the ways you can do stuff with it, and that's why it's a great commander card.
Plotting your combos.
Yeah. I mean, you can say a lot of things about the card, but you can't deny the effect is extremely powerful.
Yep.
Yeah, it is.
Absolutely. Yeah. Love it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a delicious card. I can't wait to play it. Hopefully that will be in the box that I just pre-ordered.
Nice.
And then maybe the second one. And then later in the summer, the third. Who knows? Okay, so on our show, Josh, we have a segment that we like to talk about somewhat problematic cards. That segment is called The Watch List.
The Watch List.
I imagine the remember the old Inside Edition like sound? Don't watch this. That's what I imagine when you say that.
Yeah, it's close.
Make that happen, Eli.
Yeah, Eli, get on that. Eli, who we call Nate in this case.
Hey.
So on the watch list, we talk about cards that are problems in EDH. At the minimum, they tend to warp a game where everybody tries to seize control of that card or otherwise mitigate the effects of that card. And at their worst, an entire meta can change as the players build decks in order to counter that effect. This week is going to be really short because we will all agree that this card should be banned just on principle alone. Josh, do you want to talk about this card, or
do you want me to intro the card? You mean, why? Because you don't want to say the name of it?
I want to say it. I want to say it because it's so close to my heart. This week's watch list
says the ambassador.
This week's watch list card is, of course, the one, the only, Consecrated Sphinx.
Boom.
There was a pause.
I wasn't sure if I might have timed that incorrectly. Sorry.
The pause was so the listeners at home could all go yay as they heard the name of their favorite card said out loud.
Mostly, it was that weighty pause before the tears begin.
Before the tears begin.
Yes.
So Nate,
does everybody what know does what this card does?
Yeah. Let's say Nate. What does Consecrate
Sphinx
do?
It's four colorless. It's two blue. It's a creature sphinx. It's a 4/6. It's flying. Hey, how about that? That's pretty cool. Hey, but what else? Whenever an opponent draws a card, you may draw two cards.
Oh, brilliant.
Seems good.
And he's blessed by the hands of Jyn Gitaxias.
See, and that just takes it over the line.
In the picture, he looks kind of messed up.
Yeah,
he's
he is.
Like asymmetrical and kind of robotic assimilated there.
He's flying around the Synod, isn't he? The old Vedalken origin query place that they took over.
He doesn't look happy about it.
See, I'm really Vorthos-y about Phyrexian cards, which is weird that me and Phil are friends, considering our polar ends of this scale.
Yeah, it's like we say Llanowar and you're like, what? And then you can tell us from the art what the Consecrated Sphinx is flying around.
Yeah, sorry about that. So this card's a very big personal favorite of mine. I own a couple of playsets of this. If I run a blue deck, even if it's splash blue, this goes in the deck.
Oh.
It's that good.
So this is your auto-include for blue?
This is one of two auto-includes for blue, the other being Cyclonic Rift.
Cyclonic Rift.
Everybody knows, Sean.
Yeah.
Sorry to state the obvious.
Consecrated Sphinx is, card's great.
So, I mean, I shouldn't talk about this card too much from why it's a problem, because I don't think it's a problem. So you guys have fun.
I mean, when you guys say the watch list, are you literally think that the card should be banned? I mean,
No. It's just a card that affects the group. It affects the micro meta that you're playing. Mm-hmm.
So once
you know that it's going to be played, then everyone else has to design cards to either, you know, they add more removal in their deck or they add more things to steal that Consecrated Sphinx or something.
I mean,
like
I would say, like, the thing that keeps the Consecrated Sphinx in line is that stuff that combats that also combats all kinds of stuff that you should be able to fight. Like, it's not like fighting on a weird axis. It's a creature that's has a utility ability. If your deck can't defeat a creature that has a utility ability, then you inherently built it wrong. Now, if your deck can't beat an enchantment that has Shroud and Indestructible, that's pretty specific. And, you know, I'm not saying you built your deck wrong, but if you can't beat, like, a creature with a utility ability, like, that's not, I don't know, that just doesn't seem bannable to me. There's so many of those that you need to deal with that it's like, do you really expect to come in contact with a game where nobody plays a creature that's doing something annoying that you might have to deal with?
I did us a disservice by being a little smarmy in the introduction there to the watch list. These aren't cards necessarily that should be banned, but they're definitely cards that cause problems. And in particular, it's kind of to help our newer players. Watch for these cards, and even if they don't really have a lot of experience with Consecrated Sphinx, they should know that it needs to die as soon as it hits the table.
die or copy it, make your own one.
Yeah, or at least one rotation. I like to do things like play Molten Psyche or Winds of Change or one of those cards that says discard the amount of cards you have in your hand and draw that many cards. Because I like people to go off with Consecrated Sphinx and then I just kill them.
Mm.
Yeah.
You know, they're holding 50 cards and they feel so proud of themselves and you go, Molten Psyche, see ya.
Okay. Nice. Funny story. With a
Wait, what was the other one?
Winds of Change. He went old school on us.
Yeah, nice.
There's a number of cards that sort of punish you for having a lot of cards in your hand, and they are generally good in EDH because you're almost never going to run into a game where somebody isn't going off because card draw is so good in the format. And so they're almost never useless.
Oh, yeah. Poor Barigmos.
Fun story of Consecrated Sphinx. It killed me once. From my opponent playing one without it attacking me, I flashed in a Notion Thief.
Oh yeah!
And my opponent cast a Consecrated Sphinx, made me draw my deck. I'm sitting here cockily going, "It's all right. I know I've got a Slaughter Pact in here, so they're expecting me to die." Oh look, I took the Slaughter Pact out. I found out as I drew the last card.
That's pretty funny.
Whoops. Never mind. I swapped it for a Science of the Believers, which Phil told me I should do. But, yeah, no. Notion Thief's a funny card. We won't talk about it now. Go look it up at home if you don't know what that does.
It makes it so you draw a card when your opponent would draw a card, but it's not a May ability. So somebody, somebody with a Consecrated Sphinx can literally just draw you out because you draw a card. They go, I'll draw two, but that makes you draw two. But because you drew, they say, I'll draw two more. Then you draw two, so they just mill you out.
Which means they draw four, which means you draw four, which means they draw eight, which means you draw... Yeah, that's why if you're running a Notion Thief and you know your meta runs Consecrated Sphinx, make sure you have an instant speed removal available to you.
But Notion Thief plus Teferi's Puzzle Box is just you win, so you got that going for you.
Yeah, nice. Very nice.
That's excellent.
Which should be in every Nekusar deck, that combo, yeah.
I don't put Notion Thief in my Nekusar deck.
Oh, it's a good one. It's handy if you can go... I suppose you got other ways of drawing cards.
But you want everyone else to draw cards.
Exactly. I don't want to stop them drawing cards. And it's really dangerous if you got everybody drawing five cards and you drop that, and now you're drawing, you know, 12.
Dangerous or fun.
Oops.
So, Consecrated Sphinx, go buy it, kids.
It should... I mean, it's definitely like... unless you're Phil, it should... It should be in almost every deck with blue in it, for sure.
The Phyrexian cards are just crutches. They're just crutches. You should do without them.
Sometimes you have a broken leg, Phil.
Sometimes, that's right. In which case, maybe you shouldn't be racing then. Oh, snap.
Everyone, just yay or nay, if you have ever played a card like Phyrexian Arena, but said, it's okay... Because the arena is a place in Phyrexia, not intrinsically Phyrexian itself.
Are we calling somebody a hypocrite? Is that what we're doing?
No.
I'm not naming anyone, Josh.
Oh, God. So that would be a real jerky thing to do, wouldn't it?
It would, wouldn't it?
And we just called somebody a jerk. This is actually going to segue really well into our main topic.
Yep.
Yeah.
Etiquette.
So our main topic today is etiquette. The Twitter conversation we had, I think it was funny because it stemmed from a misunderstanding where I think Josh thought Sean was saying that a particular play style or actually a particular play was kind of a jerky thing to do.
No, it didn't actually. That it sort of evolved to that, but there was a listener or a Twitter question just saying, I think the person had named like which one makes somebody more of a jerk, playing Iona or a Blood Moon? It was something like that. One of those questions that you get asked like six times a week.
Didn't they ask, like, isn't Blood Moon a jerk card or something like that? It was a redacted question.
I think it was Iona versus Blood Moon.
Yeah, it was like, I don't know if it was Iona and Blood Moon, but it was like two cards, and one was definitely Blood Moon. Right. And they said, you know, yeah, which one makes somebody more of a jerk? Or that was the gist of the question was like, you know. And they tweeted it out to, you know, us, you guys, a few other Commander-based podcasts and article writers. And everybody started weighing in. And I came in at some point and just said, this type of conversation I just think is really bad for our format. Like, I don't like this idea. And it's really been perpetrated out there by a lot of people that playing a certain card makes somebody a quote-unquote jerk or quote-unquote mean or any of these other names that we want to apply to the person playing the card. You know, that's what I don't like, and I think it actively keeps people out of the format.
So now you are legendary for sort of promising to get back at people who play Blood Moon.
Correct.
Is that because, you know, do you quietly go, that person's a jerk for playing
Blood
Moon?
No, not at all. No? Not at all. I don't think they're a jerk. I don't like that card, but it's not because I think it's really dangerous to prescribe some sort of personality trait to a person playing the game. You know, that to me, I don't have anything to do with that. I don't think they're a jerk. I'll be like, oh, you're playing Blood Moon. I hate that card because I don't like that card. It has nothing to do with you. But I don't want you to play that card, so I'm going to come at you. But I'm handling it in-game. I'm not being a mean to you. I'm not going to call you names. I'm not going to, you know, after the game, I'm going to laugh. I'm going to joke. I'm going to be like, hey, good play. It might even be right to play the Blood Moon. It probably was. It probably hosed my deck. It has nothing to do. That's what I don't like, is going to that level where you call somebody a quote-unquote jerk.
Okay, so I feel like I've not actually had a chance to put my side of where I came into this conversation in. Because at the moment, people listen to this will be thinking, oh, he must agree with the listener that these are jerky plays. And I didn't. So my stance on it, which is where me and Josh got debating, was that there's no such thing as a jerky card. Cards intrinsically can't be a jerky thing to do. I really hate the word jerk, so it's going to sound horrible and have no meaning by the end of this conversation because we're going to say it a billion times.
Jerk, 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 jerk.
Like that.
Jerk chicken.
I'm glad you went to chicken there.
Yes, me too.
Teferi's puzzle box is a jerk card.
Sure enough.
You're a jerk card, and so is your face. So, but my stance was that I...
Yeah, we're all adults here. This is great.
No one said your mama, so yeah, anyway. Right, so yeah, cards can't be jerks themselves. That is, they're bits of cardboard. That's impossible. But I've witnessed people play like jerks, and I don't mean... I've played this Blood Moon because it gives me a board advantage. And I gave a very specific example. I'll give you the example I gave in my and Josh's Twitter conversation. So at my LGS, there's someone that's playing, getting into Magic, and playing Standard and drafting a little bit, but a lot of their friends play Commander, so they decide to put into the format. They spend £30, which I don't know how much it is in your fake money, buy the Teferi pre-constructed Commander deck, Commander 14 deck. They get into turn 4 of their game. Their opponent... turn 4 drops Quicksilver Amulet. Got that on turn 3. 4 uses Quicksilver Amulet to drop in Iona, sets it to blue. And the person's just like, oh, is this the format I'm playing? Right. So you win, do you? Well done. And the guy was pissed off and upset, and the guy he was playing against was just basically laughing at him. And see, that's a jerky play, and that's someone acting like a jerk, and that, I felt, does harm our format. Now, it's not the card's fault. That is something that comes from you as a person, because I would never have done that to someone just starting to dip their toe into the Commander bath. And
so you recognize that a new player has been turned off by this experience.
Yeah, the guy traded his deck in. He said, I can't be asked for this. Yeah, we were in LGS. It wasn't like immediately. He sort of sat around the shop for a bit, and I offered him a game, but he was a bit despondent. And eventually he just went to the owner of the LGS. He's a good guy, and the guy let him swap it in for credit. Store credit. And it's like, well, that's not helping our format, is it?
Right, but that has nothing. See, you spent a lot of time on that story, and the cards don't matter. You know, you said, oh,
no, I agree. Yeah. I 100% agree.
Yeah, and that's my point there. That guy could have just punched the dude in the face. He'd be a jerk, and the guy might not want to play that LGS anymore. It would have nothing to do with cards. Like, you know, a person like that plays the Iona in that situation, you know, and again, I don't want to go too hard at that guy either, because I don't know, you know, everything that was going on. But, you know, if somebody does that to who they know is a new player, then yeah, you can be a jerk. I'm not saying you can't be a jerk. I'm not saying no one that plays Magic is ever a jerk. That has nothing to do with it. It's just the cards don't make that. The cards have nothing to do with it. The person being a jerk has to do with it.
Yep.
But just the act of putting a Blood Moon onto the table, that has nothing to do with anything about when somebody's a jerk or not. And we hear these stories and we perpetrate them and we throw them out there on our podcasts and on articles and on Twitter. And people hear this stuff and it does keep them out of playing the format because they're scared, because they think in their mind, well, I don't think Blood Moon's that bad of a card. And if I play something like Blood Moon, and I don't know all the whole full list of what cards people consider mean or jerky or whatever, and if I play one of those cards, then they're going to think that I'm just mean. And that's like pretty intimidating to come to a setting and play a game where you don't know all the unwritten rules, you know? And so that's what I was saying, was I just didn't like the conversations that go in that manner, that are framed in that manner, that say, hey, if you play this type of card, you're a bad person.
Yeah.
So Nate, you've been thinking about ways to avoid this, right? Nate, you have a lot of experience playing with strangers.
Yeah, I go on the public arenas and bash heads, sure.
Is that bathhouses, rest stops, that sort of stuff?
I get my commander fix in where I can. Whether you are a new player or not, a way to avoid this kind of experienced animosity is to try to gauge the group beforehand if you're sitting down to a new group. So I spent some time looking at a list of online EDH games on a platform over time, and in the context of etiquette, there are some notable trends among the game titles. So this can carry over to a face-to-face setting. So when you're sitting down with a new group, ask what kind of EDH game this is, and listen for any of the following keywords. If they say casual or fun, then it should be relatively safe, depending on the existing group definition of these words, which you might find out differs from your definitions of casual and or fun. Our next category is test. I'm testing a deck. Now, this category can be a trap because I've listed test separately from casual fun, because I've observed that someone testing a deck does not necessarily imply that they are testing a casual fun deck. So if you see the word test without also seeing casual or fun, then strap yourself in. Next category is competitive, and just variations on that. And that implies a no restrictions bloodbath. You're going to get Iona'd on turn two. Also ask if there are any specific house rules. And some common ones are no infinite combos, no mass land destruction. Some people don't like extra turns, but that tends to, they tend to be afraid of infinite extra turns.
Those people are jerks.
Extra turns in itself. And some don't like mass discard.
That was pretty jerky, Sean.
Yeah, man.
They're all good things to do online, but online. That's good just to have a conversation. What I'm hearing there is have a conversation when you sit down with a group of players you don't know, or it's an irregular play group, or if it's your regular meta and a new person's joining, and just have a 5-minute chat before you play, and that should determine this sort of stuff. And if you're the new person to an already existing meta, don't come in and try and change that meta. Just play to what's there. In my opinion.
See, what I hear too, though, when I hear that list, is all the onus is on the person going into the game. And I would like to say that.
That's
what it feels like, because it's like, read these words and then behave in this manner. And we need to start putting some of that back on the people who are creating that game and who, you know, if you're coming into a new playgroup, it should be incumbent upon the new playgroup to do things too. And
sure.
And I think that, and one of those things, and not enough people are doing this, is just be more tolerant. Just, you know, it's also partially the new player's fault in your story, Sean. Now, it's not all, but, you know, playing one game and then making a broad generalization about what the format is not really very logical either. And, you know, it's partially other people at the LGS. Like, you know, they could have come over and been like, hey, that guy's a jerk. That's not what EDH is. Come on over here. We'll show you what EDH is. You know, and
yep.
There's a lot of ways to handle things, and not everybody's going to be perfect in all situations. We all know that. But I do think, like, generally when you're at the table, you know, if you're not the new player, then you need to be doing things differently. And if you are the new player, you need to be aware too of, like, hey, listen, it's going to take you a little while to get your sea legs here. Just be open to the fact that, like, first few games, you know, you're going to be figuring stuff out. You're not going to be, it's not going to be like playing Magic at a GP where you know the format and you know how standard works. Like, just be a little bit tolerant. Yeah. And people, you know, on the other side of the table need to be thinking the same way.
At the same time, we are all human, and we tend to, if we have a bad experience, then we tend to have an adverse response to repeating that experience.
No, I totally agree, and that's why we need to be careful for new players. I do think the new player analogy gets thrown around a lot, and in my experience, we don't see it very often, but it does happen. I'm just saying, like, the people that are playing the game need to, like I don't like Blood Moon, right? Somebody plays a Blood Moon. There are tons of Blood Moons in my playgroup. In fact, there are probably more because I don't like them and they know it than there were before, you know, which is totally fine. I still react the same way, which is like, hey, play that Blood Moon. That's fine. Neither you or I is going to win this game though. But that doesn't mean I'm not going to like you anymore. You know, it has nothing to do with that. And next game, I'll probably come after you too, because that's the only way, because I'm not going to stop playing five color decks. I'm just not going to do it.
So I hunt down people who play certain things against me as well, and I get a feeling it annoys Phil, and he always accuses me of being too red, and it's an emotional response, and you're going to lose games because of it. And I turn around and I don't look him in the eye because we're over the internet, but just sincerely say to him, I don't care if I lose a game. You're going to learn that sort of action, for me, it's Homeward Path. I hate Homeward Path. That sort of...
Well, we all add it to our decks because of you, Sean.
You hate you Homeward
Path? That is how our meta has evolved.
Yeah, yeah, that's a little weird. My favorite deck is Dragonlord Silumgard deck, and it's my little baby other than my Lazav deck.
He does Dimir Control with Lazav.
You hate it. It's like hating Sol Ring, though. Like, that deck is in like that card's in every deck.
Which just means I have to pack every deck I have with Strip Mines, Ghost Quarters, Tech Edges, all this stuff. Anyway,
which is great EV because it's like I play one card and you got to play seven different cards.
Yeah, I know. Don't need to tell me about it. I'm very aware of the problems I have set up for myself.
You know, I get what you're doing, which is you're trying to train somebody not to play it because they should think, at least, when I play this card, am I ready to have Sean kamikaze me for two or three games?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Right. So,
which is a totally fair strategy
as well.
Yeah, it totally works.
It is. So, putting on to the, I agree, Josh. The using the new player as an example, which I had done in our conversation, isn't
which
always
is fine.
Good. So, I worked for 5 years for Games Workshop, and a big focus in Games Workshop is growing the hobby. So, you could replace the word hobby with format and look at it that way. So, we had a few general rules that you had to apply to yourself as a Games Workshop employee. And this applied to not just playing new people who walk through the door and saying, hey, what's Warhammer? But people who are in your game store or in your games night and you're just playing casual games against them, which was, you can take the sort of cookie cutter, the equivalent in Magic is, I've just got a stack full of 2-card infinite combos I can win on turn 4 type stuff, which is hard to do in Commander, I understand, or harder to do in Commander, but isn't impossible. Not to take those kind of decks, and in Games Workshop, not to take those kind of army lists where I just can't die, and pitch your game that way, and you're looking to give your opponents a fun experience. And I think the first key to achieving that is stop caring about winning. People need to just... Winning, if your goal for playing Magic or playing Commander is just, I must win every game, and if you get upset that you don't win every game, it's not... You're not going to have a good time, because only one person can win, and most games are at least 4 players, in my experience. If you're winning 1/4 of your games, you're on a good win curve, I think.
Right.
People get upset with this, where they get upset with plays against them, this sort of jerky play, I think. We were talking about, you did this, this threat me, because I didn't win. It's like, well, you were never going to win, essentially. You would have been the lucky one person out of the 4 that would win if you'd played correctly or built your deck correctly. But don't get so upset about that, people. Just look to play a fun deck. Look to play in a way you want to play. And if your play style doesn't match your playgroup's play style, go find a playgroup that it does, because they will be out there. If you're all about super spiky infinite combos, there'll be people out there that love that stuff. Not just allow it, love that stuff. Like, he beat us out of nowhere and that sort of thing. Just go and embrace fun. Be fun.
That harkens very much back to the 75% philosophy that Jason Ault espouses.
Yeah, we've had a debate about whether I'm 75% or not, Phil.
Nope.
But I said this before, right? They are 75%. Imagine what they'd be like at 100%.
They are. They're a 75% only because you're rounding down to the quartile.
It's because I'm doing it in metric system.
Yes.
What? Percent is the metric system.
Shut up, Nate.
Wait, percent is the metric system?
It's based on digits to 10.
Right, it's all base 10.
Yep, there's only 10 or 20%. There's no 17%.
I had a little rant there, guys. Sorry, I went on for a bit.
I agree with you and I agree with what you're saying. You know, I
there
think
was a flip
my
side
big
to that. Sorry, Josh. The flip side to that rant was if you were at like a tournament, which I guess would be the equivalent of a GP or a PTQ or something, all gloves were off. Be as much of a bleep that you wanted to be. Yeah.
Kill them.
I think my big point was about the rhetoric surrounding it, though, because that is. You know, talking about enticing people to join the format and to try the format. Well, for one, Commander's not a good jumping off point into Magic as a game. It's actually Agreed. Pretty bad. Because Standard, if you think about it, or really the best way to go about it is one of those starter, you know, beginner Magic decks. But even if you just jump into Standard, you're looking at 1,000 cards you need to learn, you know. Even if you're Modern, you're looking at, you know, 7, 8, maybe 10,000 cards you need to learn. We're all of a sudden in like 20,000 cards you need to know interactions of. Like, it's the most complicated you could possibly get. And we're also, like, even Legacy is less complicated because, yeah, they have access to the same amount of cards, but viability wise, they don't. Like, 80% of those cards just have no chance to ever be played in Legacy. So they don't even need to know as many cards as we need to know. So all of a sudden, Commander is just a very bad point to be starting to play Magic to begin with. So if you see a new player, one of the better things you can do is be like, hey, you want to learn Magic. That's awesome. Let's learn it in a different environment than Commander, because that probably doesn't have the best chance to hook you into the game. Now, that would be, you know, perfect, but we don't always fall into the perfect scenario. So one of the things I was trying to say is, like, rhetoric-wise, I just wish we would, as a community, a Commander community, dial down the calling people out and calling people names because of certain cards. Because one of the things you said I think really resonates. You're not mad about Iona. You're mad that you lost the game.
Yep.
So don't call somebody a jerk for a card, because you're not mad about the card, because that card could have been Insurrection, and it could have been, you know, Prophet of Kruphix, and it could have been Cyclonic Rift, and it could have been a million different cards that would beat you in any given scenario. You're just mad you lost. So own that. Be an adult. Own that. You're mad you lost. That's okay to be mad you lost, but don't call anybody names over it. And definitely don't go out on Twitter or your podcast or your articles and call people jerks for playing certain cards, because that actively keeps people from dipping their toe in the water in our format.
Yes, I think social media is, well, the second you start calling people out on any form of social media and calling them names. So my response to the player that played the Iona with Quicksilver Amulet is, I said to the guy, I said, okay, you won the game afterwards. As you won the game, who learned anything from that? You've learned that Quicksilver Amulet is a great card, but you already knew that. It was in your deck. And the other guy now doesn't want to play our format. And this kind of self-reflection on why we're playing things. It's so I didn't.
But you're never
going to
convince that guy. You know, you might, but you know, your chances of convincing that guy to change his personality is, you know, not very high. You know,
I can be very persuasive.
So Sean, you're not mad that you lost a game. You're mad that you lost a potential.
Yeah, like, so there's a guy now. It wasn't me that lost the game, and I was merely observing the game. You got a guy there that could have been getting into our format, and it's like, why have we done, why do that? This guy doesn't want to play now. He still played Magic, and he carried on playing Standard and Limited and stuff. But he then joins that crowd, because there's that group of people that don't play Commander. And we've had some of them, I don't know, attempting to troll us, I guess, on our social media pages, who just play Magic and go, oh, Commander's for losers, isn't it? Oh, you guys, you don't want to play with anything. I'm sure, Josh, you've experienced that as well.
Oh, sure.
So you're turning, not only are you turning someone off the format, you're potentially turning someone into one of those people who then talk to their friends that go, oh, don't play Commander, it's just full of ridiculous, it's like Legacy for people that want to play 2-hour games of Magic, yeah, which we know is not true, and it's just damaging, really damaging. And
but we're saying different things. You're saying don't be a jerk. I'm saying stop jerkifying people, at least publicly. Yeah, but
the next way is to say that if you come across that...
I think what you're doing right now is actually sort of like... I understand and your heart's in the right place, but to me it's falling under the category of like, man, we're talking about somebody being a jerk while playing Commander a lot, and now the takeaway for somebody listening might be like, geez, there's a lot of jerks playing that format. You know, and I'm scared of that. I don't like to...
There's not, so, though. There's, so this is... if you're listening to this, obviously we're talking about a specific topic, I would hope to think. Because... normally, both our podcasts, in fact, nearly every podcast out there that's about Commander, and there's more than just our two, we endlessly and enthusiastically froth at the mouth about how great this format is and how fantastic it is. And every format, there'll be people that say Modern's rubbish because it's a shark pit where there are like 10 decks and you have to pick which one of the 10 decks you want to buy the pre-written list for and just play with that. Which, although there's elements of truth to it, because it's a solvable format because there's a limited pool, it's not in 100% true, and that is a constantly shifting meta in Modern. Constantly shifting meta and things moving in. So if you're interested in that kind of competitive play, go to Modern. But I don't think we're going to put anyone off discussing... I don't like the name-calling aspect of it, I guess. I could have gone up to that guy at the end of it and said, hey, jerk, why'd you do that? That guy's not happy now. But it's... You can...
You should try to be educational and not accusatory.
And it's not just Magic, is it? You could argue chess, if you want to take it back to its natural strategic origins of all gaming. You could sit and say, well, there are some defenses which are particularly tough for someone to break down, especially if they're inexperienced at playing chess. And it's... I don't know. You have to have a forum to discuss things that people don't like about games if they play them, don't you? You can't just pretend the problem doesn't exist. Problem's the wrong word. You can't pretend that how people feel about certain aspects of games don't exist just because you think it's unhealthy. The better way is to discuss them and say, well, here's how you deal with it. That's my personal opinion, no?
So I guess what we're saying is, with many of these issues that come up in gaming and within gaming groups, is that communication is the key, right? And in theory, most players are adults or at least old enough to be able to handle the complexities of Magic. And so they should already be able to rely on kind of interpersonal communication to either, if they can't figure out ahead of time, right, because you just stumble into a meta, you play a quick game, and then all of a sudden you realize that that environment was not set up in a way that you appreciate, then they should be able to adapt to it afterward. Is that what we're saying?
Yeah.
Without necessarily taking it personally, right?
I'm not saying anything about how people should take things or what they should take. My point was 100% about how it's discussed in public forums about our format. I just want people to be really careful when saying, you know, things like, you know, oh, that guy played Blood Moon, he's a jerk. That's it. It's not even about changing behavior as far as like of the person that played the game or anything about that game that was played. It's about how you refer to it. Just be aware when you refer to things in that manner, somebody sitting next to you is thinking, well, I've played Blood Moon before. Will this guy think I'm a jerk if I play Blood Moon? I don't want to play a Commander game where somebody's just going to think that I'm a bad person for playing a certain card. That's my point. It doesn't have anything to do with actual behavior during the game. It's about how it's portrayed and how that turns people off.
That's what I mean, that response that is sort of predicated on being emotionally mature enough not to take it personally and then express
it. But that's in your playgroup. We're talking about Twitter, we're talking about articles, we're talking about podcasts, we're talking about people just adding LGS talking and somebody else is next to them. Right. They're not in your playgroup. You're not having a conversation with them. They're overhearing things. And they're drawing conclusions from that. And that's what I'm saying, we should be careful.
Yes, absolutely. It's the same response, just on a much bigger scale, especially if you're, you know, if you're tweeting and you have any number of followers who may or may not be interested in the game. The moment you take it to a one-to-many relationship, right, communication relationship, you're basically taking that same response where you might sit next to a buddy and say, oh, that was a real jerky move or whatever. But now you're doing it with hundreds of people, potentially.
I think it's even damaging when it's just the table over at your LGS, because I've heard it.
You guys have heard it. I agree.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah, and it definitely hurts our format. And just keep that in mind. Like, listen, we're not going to...
Yep.
People aren't going to stop complaining about, you know, cards they don't like and people they don't like and plays they don't like and all kinds of things they don't like, because that's what people do. I'm just saying, just be aware when you do that about our format, you can hurt it. Because I've literally talked to tons of people that have a weird view of what Commander is, because that's their only exposure to it is what they've heard about it from other Magic players. And they've heard people say, well, in that format, people think that other people are jerks if they played Blood Moon.
Yep. That, I know this exact conversation. In fact, we had it with someone on our Facebook page just recently, which me and Phil got involved in a debate with someone who essentially just kept saying, no, but it's a format where people just do what they want and they just do the jerkiest things they can do. I mean, I'm paraphrasing and adding the word jerk in there to be relevant.
Yeah.
And there was no convincing
them. Other synonyms.
Yes, there are. I could use them, but I'd end up swearing. I would need the bleeper. Right. Eli, get the bleeper. I'm going to go on a rant.
Poor Eli. That guy is overworked.
Yeah. For those who don't know, Eli is the editor for the Command Zone.
Can we subcontract from him? We might get our episodes out on time.
Yeah, then maybe we could get out on Tuesday. Maybe we could do two episodes and get them out on Tuesday and Thursday.
So anyway, what I was saying is I think where we disagree, Josh, I think the thing is, this is what happened when we were having a conversation on Twitter. We essentially 100% agree with each other.
We're just talking about slightly different things.
Yeah, but I think they have a crossover, and I think it is... So a podcast like this one we're recording right this second, which is a mature conversation where we're not just firing shots at each other. At least I don't feel it's been like that.
Not just firing shots, right.
Get me my gun. Although you're American, you've got a bigger gun.
Oh, yeah. Do not go there.
I think it is important. So, you know, if someone who is new to the Commander randomly picks up this episode of the podcast and listens to it, they can go, actually, people who are in the format and deep in the format aren't people who are going to call other people jerks for playing a Blood Moon or a Homeward Path. Although if you play a Homeward Path, you are a jerk. No, I'm joking. They're not that people. Our community isn't that. But you need to, if there's a problem, just saying we shouldn't be using this rhetoric and this type of language. Well, other people are going to use it. So you have to take that language into how you're using to fight against it. You have to co-opt in and say, well, actually, you know, all right, okay, you think I'm a jerk for playing Blood Moon, whatever, or you think it's a jerky card, or... Yeah, you think it's a degenerate play, which I know is not entirely the same as what we're talking about, but people often attribute what they consider degenerate to you being a wanker. You might want to bleep that one if you're in Europe. But you have to have that conversation. You can't just say, oh, we don't talk about this. It doesn't grow the format. You need to have and say to the person, well, why do you think it's that? Here's how you can combat that kind of play in the future. Here's perhaps, you know, you've got an entire pool of almost every single card in Magic ever printed, which is more than you've got in Standard, which is what most people play, Standard or Limited, isn't it? Let's find a solution to your problem in the game. you have to acknowledge people do feel the way they feel. You can't just say it's wrong. Wrong's the incorrect word.
Right. It's a needs-based communication. Yeah. You have to take into account the person's needs when you're communicating with them.
So the guy on Facebook who we ended up having a debate with, he was very much of the opinion that Commander is this format, which was describing it how you were before, Josh, where people do these crazy things. And one of his points was that, oh, you know, if I play this, this, and this, I'll get told I can't play with these people anymore and I'm not into that. So we tried to have a conversation with him, being, I think, quite eloquent and using debate. Me and Phil, it was, unless Nate was posting up with the commander, I didn't see him, but it was definitely me and Phil. And he didn't have a response, but we had the conversation with him. We didn't just say, oh, you can't talk like that. We said, right, okay, so his main point of contention was his play group where he was playing Commander, everywhere they had such an obscure set of house rules and a house band list that he couldn't get into it. He didn't know what he was allowed to do. And he didn't want to debate. And we said, we'll find a different LGS or ask them specifically what it is. It was just like I don't know. Anyway, carry on. I've been talking way too long.
I just object to the idea that I'm just saying we can't talk about that, don't talk about that. I'm not. But that was my main point. That was my main point. Of course, if you have the opportunity. But, I mean, you don't. You often don't. And that's my point. You know, yeah, if it's your buddy or if it's some guy or if you witness something happen, like, if you want the format to grow and be strong, then you should go up to, you know, I wouldn't even go up to the guy that played the Iona. I would go up to the other guy. But you should go up to somebody probably and say something.
I spoke to them both.
For frame and context. You know, just... But I'm saying there's a lot of this rhetoric out there. And if we could just tone down that rhetoric a lot, like you can't get people, like I said, you can't get them to stop complaining. You can't. If I could just get them to tone it down 10%, that would be 10% better than it is now. You know, and that's my only point. And I'm not disagreeing with any of your points. It's just that if you try and talk about like six different things, you have no chance of affecting it. But maybe we can make the point that this rhetoric is bad for Commander. And so if people just tone it down a little bit, it would be good. That's my only point. That's the only thing I'm saying. I'm not trying to like work miracles where people never talk about or complain about the cards they dislike or the plays they dislike. That's not realistic.
Right. It's hard to summarize all of this, this entire discussion. But I think Nate has something he's probably going to call the Plorg perspective, I suspect.
Ooh, I like this. Wow.
The Plorg perspective. Yeah. I've been playing games online and on face-to-face for, you know, over half my lifetime, which is longer than some Magic players have been alive. So the Plorg perspective is after defeating hundreds of thousands of opponents and being defeated yourself tens of thousands of times, you don't have time to invest your emotions in each individual game. If someone ends a game on turn 2 or 3 or 4 or 5, don't get angry. Just say thank you for the game and then either go find another game or bring out a meaner deck of your own or try to educate the meta that you are in and try to make some equilibrium.
That sounds
among
pretty fair.
Decks that are played.
Our Lord spoke on the day, the 5th of July.
And again, see, that to me, we're just fixating on the wrong stuff there. I keep hammering this point, but it has nothing to do with anything about the game or what happened in the game.
I don't think anyone's disagreed with you at any point, Josh, that you shouldn't use rhetoric.
Yeah, I just feel like we keep trying to wrap it up, and the wrap-ups keep just not mentioning what I think is my central point, which is it all has points to do with how we're talking about playing the game when we're not playing it.
Which is what I was just about to get to, right? So those are more practical ways to avoid your basically emotions becoming inflamed to the point where you must, where you feel the need then to express yourself in particular in a public fashion, right? Like, if you don't have the ability to just kind of monitor what you're saying and just control yourself that way, it may be helpful to take some of those approaches, take them to heart, right? And then over time, maybe that'll help your tendency not to expound in public on how much of a, let's just say, your opinions about another player's play style.
If you sling mud on somebody, you're going to get mud on yourself.
Yeah. and absolutely. And what Josh is saying is that if you sling mud, not only are you going to sling mud on, you know, get mud on yourself and on the person you're hitting, but people who are standing near you are going to get hit with mud too.
And they're going to say, hey, this room, this EDH room is filled with mud. I don't want to be here.
Yeah, I don't want to be here.
I'm choking on mud.
And Josh, I think that's your point, right? They're actually correlated topics.
They're correlated, yeah. I think that's the problem that Sean and I were having on Twitter, is that I don't disagree with his point. I just don't think it's actually the same point that I'm making, because my point has nothing to do with playing and has everything to do with talking about the playing.
Yeah. Listener questions.
Yeah, hey. So we have a listener whose name is Mr. Plorg. Look at that. At Mr. Plorg on Twitter. He has a question.
All right.
Yeah. Since
Nate, why don't you read this one?
Totally coincidentally, why don't you read it?
Okay. Since the Blood Moon card is expensive in actual money, I mean, it was $20 at least at GP Vegas, and it's since spiked to ridiculous. Right. Since the Blood Moon card is expensive and the Ruination card is cheap, do you recommend we play Ruination instead?
Sure. Whatever you like.
All right.
Whatever you can get your hands on. Maybe play both.
Excuse me while I just read what Ruination does.
Ruination is 3 and a red sorcery. Destroy all non-basic lands.
Actually, Ruination is way less oppressive, because Blood Moon actually stops any future lands that come into play from also being good. Whereas Ruination, right. at least when it's done, it's over. Yeah. Play Magus of the Moon.
Blood Moon like hangs around on the table mugging you off from across the
other
side.
And it's an enchantment, and it turns your stuff to specifically red, the one color that can't do anything about enchantments. It's a super well-designed card. It does exactly what it's supposed to do. You know, it just hoses 5-color decks. Like I said, I don't have any problem with a person that plays it personally, but that card just stops like most of my decks, and I don't want to build a bunch of decks just to beat one card. So,
right.
You know, my only real recourse is like, well, I'm going to do everything I can to make sure that you don't win this game, because I obviously now can't. And probably the next game too, just because I want you to, at least next time you have Blood Moon in your hand, think about not playing it.
I think we are all familiar with that strategy.
Yeah.
Yes.
I think, Josh, me and you have a very similar play style.
Probably.
Nate, why don't you read the next one?
From Willie Umanzor in L.A., what's your favorite taco place?
Oh, my favorite taco place in L.A. is probably a food truck.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's probably the Koji truck.
Oh, that is so good.
That's probably my favorite. Yeah, I'm just going to go with that. I'm not going to, no qualifiers.
All right.
It's a good truck. Yeah. It's good food.
Wafflecone at WC Power 9.
What's up, Jake?
He was at the Las Vegas gathering.
He's from my hometown of Portland, although he lives in Vegas now.
And he's asking if there's going to be any other similar meetings in the future.
I'm sure there will be. That one was a pretty big success. And we get a lot of product support from Wizards when we did it. And we had a lot of Wizards people show up. So if there is a big event where it makes sense, I'm sure we'll do it again.
Excellent.
Yeah, that's excellent. I think we'll be there too.
You definitely will be, if you know what's good for you. Maybe we can get Sean over here.
Yeah, I'm planning to come out, actually. So
it's a long-term.
It'd be good if I can come out when there is an event. Rather than just turning up and going, hello, I've got some cards. Somebody want to play Magic with me?
Any of you jerks want to play?
Oi, wankers, why aren't we playing cards?
Jason Alt at Jason E. Alt asks,
no, this is going to be snarky.
Ask him who his favorite commander and guest has been so far.
I don't know. You guys haven't had any guests yet, have you? None of any importance.
we did have Payton and Austin.
Oh, there you
on.
Go. Oh yeah, Blake. I've heard Blake before.
Yep,
Blake is my favorite guest so far.
Yeah.
So James at Let's Go Terps.
Must be from Maryland.
Yeah, Maryland. Terrapins. How do you, this is a good question, how do you go about making cuts, and how much redundancy is too much?
Well, I usually have a plan for the deck. So let's say it's Nekusar, just because most people know what he does. then I'll sort of split all the cards that I have set aside into categories. So for Nekusar, you obviously want card draw. You obviously want cards that punish people for drawing cards. Then you always want mana ramp. And then you sometimes want things like board wipes. Nekusar really wants board wipes or pillow forty type stuff because he doesn't want to get attacked. And so I make all these columns. And then I just sort of arbitrarily at first determine how much percentage of my deck I want to be each of these columns. So usually I want about 10% to be card draw and 10% to be mana ramp. Now in Nekusar, I want way more card draw than that. And then I want, you know, a certain amount of things that punish you for drawing cards, probably around 10% or so. And then that's how I sort of make cuts because I go, oh, well, this column, the mana ramp column, is huge because I don't need every signet and I don't need every, you know, clue stone and every banner. So I take out a bunch of that until it's down to what I want to be. And that's sort of how I make cuts through the deck is I go, oh, in this category, I only need this many cards. And so which are the worst ones in this column? So that's how I make cuts. And then what was the second part of that question? I know it was a two-parter, but I forgot now.
Oh, how much redundancy is too much?
Oh, that totally is deck dependent. But you always can hit that wall where you've got too much redundancy. So again, Nekusar, you can have too many cards that punish people for drawing cards because, you know, if you only draw that and you don't draw any card draw, then that's pretty crappy. So what I found out in the Nekusar deck specifically was that the deck can't have too much card draw because that the drawing more cards draws you the other cards you need. So extra card draw doesn't hurt you in any way because it just gets you to the stuff you want. But if you have too much of the other stuff and you're not drawing enough cards, then your deck's not doing what it's supposed to do and it doesn't work at all. So that's just something you have to sort of find out through playing. But I would say basically every deck will have a certain point where too much redundancy is bad.
Okay. Can I ask the second part of this, Nate? Because I think it's relevant to our topic.
Sure. Go ahead.
James at Let's Go Terps also asks, can I play Torpor Orb without getting hate?
If you mean table hate, probably not. If you mean like people hate, then I hope you can. Orbs.
I play that card.
Torpor Orbs.
I play that card all the time.
Yeah, Torpor Orb's great. And it's not going to hit every deck at the table. So in general, you know, you're going to make an enemy or two, but you'll probably be able to, like, maybe there's one player at the table that really doesn't care. And if you're
Sorry, Karen.
No, go ahead.
As I said, the way of playing it with getting less hate is to play Hushwing Griff instead, which is the same, but because it's a creature, it's easier to for your opponents to deal with.
Yeah, true. Although, if you're going to play the card, like play the one that's the hardest to get rid of, unless you're just playing it for no real reason. You know, I'm assuming you'd want to play it because you know your meta has a lot of the end of the battlefield effects and such. Although, it's just generally a good card because every deck will have that. The way I'd like to play it is to be like, look at, you know, there's a Borborygmos deck or something and go, you don't care about Torpor Orb, do you? And he's like, no. And I'm like, me and you then, man, because this is going to hose those guys. And then you put it on the table. And now it's like all of a sudden you just teamed up with that guy as you played it. And now it's at least 2-on-2, you know, or whatever, however many players there are in the game. But I would, you know, you can flash it. You can even be like, that guy's playing a rune deck. And you just look over at him and you go, I could really play this Torpor Orb, but you look like you're having fun over there. I won't do it. And you will be amazed how often that guy will just be on your side for a little bit after that. And you still have the Torpor Orb in your hand if he really makes you mad.
Nate and Phil love me playing Torpor Orbs and Hushwing Griffs in my Grand Arbiter deck. They love it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, Jaleva loves it.
You got to play the cards
and Gaddock Teague
with
too.
The Leave the Battlefield effects that get rid of Torpor Orb. So Nevermaker is a really good one. There's some cards that say when they leave the battlefield, they destroy an artifact or enchantment. So make sure you put those in all your decks that are really focused on enter the battlefield effects. Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah, good question.
Nice.
Yeah.
Why must you not finish TV shows and books?
It's not that I must not finish. That is weird, worded strangely. I never feel that I have to. We should give some backstory. There was a conversation I was having with a bunch of the Twitter listeners, and I said, there's only like 6 or maybe 7 TV shows that I've watched every episode of. And I was amazed to find that most people, or maybe not most, but a lot of people were up in the 60s, 70s. I think Glenn Jones, who works at Wizards, was up in the 80s. Alex Kessler, who's the co-host of the Masters of Modern podcast, said he was at like 90. shows that he'd watched every episode of. And I was like, wow, I just don't have that gene. If I read 30 or 40 pages of a book and I'm not, and I don't like it, I won't force myself to finish it. I'm done with that book. I'm never going back. I'm going to another book. There's too many books out there. And I feel the same way about TV shows too. If, like, I bailed early in the third season of Lost, and I do not regret it.
You made the right decision. Yeah, so.
And everyone's told me that, so I'm happy with it. But, you know, and I may have missed out. I may have given up some value on some shows that got better, but that's okay.
Did you ever watch Buffy the Vampire Slayer?
Yeah, I did not watch every episode. I did work on the DVD release of that show back in the day, so I did watch most of them for work.
You could have finished at the end of season 5. Yeah. There were two whole seasons that were fine.
Well, they thought they were.
Yeah, I know. They were fine, the 6 and 7, but, you know, you didn't need them.
Yeah, it's funny because I liked that show, and there was I had to work on Angel also, and I thought that show was okay. But it wasn't one of those shows that, like, called to me to watch it. So if I'm just not, like, if I'm not going to stay up all night watching it, then there's a chance I'm going to give it up.
You weren't hooked.
Yeah, it's like, it was fine. I would watch it if nothing else was on, but there's always sports on.
Nate hooked me on Buffy.
Yeah, I mean, the show's really good, really great dialogue, you know, and I'm not denying it. I watched a lot of the episodes, I just didn't watch everyone.
All right, next question.
Andrew Magrini at @A_Magrini asks, any of your ilk making it to Gen Con this year?
My ilk? I'm not sure. Maybe? I can't speak for Jimmy. I don't know the exact dates. I don't know. it's not a yes or a no. I at this point, I have no idea. We are going to Comic-Con. I'll only be there for a couple days. I believe we'll both be at VidCon for a day or two. I'm not going to be able to make PAX this year, unfortunately.
Oh, no.
I know. So that's a big bummer. But I'm going to be in Asia, so we can do.
Oh, well, it's a trade-off. If you need someone to take your PAX ticket off of, I might know somebody.
I never got a ticket, so Jimmy can maybe hook it up, though. He's the guy to talk to for that stuff.
I don't think any of us are making it to Gen Con either this year.
When is it?
Oh,
I don't know.
I guess if we were going, we would know when it is.
Yeah, that's exactly it.
Jackie at JACII. Two parts. My local gaming store, Friday Night Magic, is just casual EDH. I wish we would add a persistent point system in that setting, since you're more often losing. Do you think that would be a good idea, since we don't play for prizes? And do you ever use the system, and in what situation?
That's interesting. So you want to keep it casual, but you want a point system, but there's no prizes on the line?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Like a casual, persistent league.
Yeah. It's all what everybody agrees to in that situation, because if they want the point system, I'm not a big fan of point systems, I'll come out and say, because I don't like how they warp the game, and they usually aren't balanced to the point where all play styles are still equal. They're usually...
So you're playing for gimmicks?
Usually you're playing, like, all of a sudden it's better for you to knock out people and still not win, or it's better for you to do XYZ to win in certain manners because the point system tells you that. And so what you get is sort of a mutated version of EDH, which can still be fun, don't get me wrong. It just all depends on what point system people go with and how they are. So it's hard to sort of endorse point systems in general. I have never seen one where I thought, that seems way better than not having a point system. But sometimes it's a necessary evil because there are prizes on the line, or because they're sort of, you know, there needs to be an award or a contest competition type system in place. So I guess to answer the question, why do you want to have points if there's no prizes on the line? If you just want to be able to keep track on a wall of like who's in first place and whatnot, I mean, points can do that. But if there's no prizes, then it's fine to do it without the points too, I would think.
Well, there may be other reasons to have a point system than simple prizes or kind of a leaderboard. Leaderboards are a big draw for kind of spiky players, but as we know, we are not a spiky lot, we EDH players in general. I mean, Sean is very, very spiky.
I'm not even slight. Oh,
raise your hand if you own a modern deck. Okay, Sean.
I have a blue-black fairies deck. Not even a tier 5 deck.
Does it have a foil Vendilion click in it?
It's got four non-foil Vendor being clicks in it.
I don't think that makes you spiky just because you play a competitive format, though. I mean, I've top eighted a PTQ. I can turn it on and off.
Yeah.
What are the other reasons to have a point system? I get the leaderboard thing because some people will play just for, it's like EPing, right? But I mean, can't you just do that the same way with just by who won who's on top of the hill at the end of the night?
Well, you can kind of emulate an achievement or trophy system,
yes.
Achievement points system by pulling off your special gimmicks. And maybe if you don't have a really competitive deck, but you want to win on style or flavor, maybe that gives you an opportunity to gain some prominence in whatever counting coup that persistent points league is.
Right. And so you maintain a persistent kind of achievement or badge mm-hmm. set. And then over time, that has to be reset just because you want people to have an opportunity to earn as many of those badges as possible, which is itself kind of a different point system, right? But it's a lot softer than a hard point system where I've got 35 points, so I'm the best EDH player around. You know, another person may only care that they've collected all of the achievements related to playing blue spells or green spells.
Right. Well, it is something that Magic, I think, has tried to implement in the past too, and I think the draw of like fancy skins in League of Legends or achievements is there's a lot of evidence to suggest that that does drive your player base. When you put it that way, it seems kind of smart to me. I still don't like point systems because it's telling me how to build my deck and what's optimal that's different from what I'm used to, but it could still be really fun. I guess it would just really have to do with your LGS and the people there and what they're into. And I mean, if it's not for prizes, to me, it's like anything kind of can go. So, yeah, why not?
A league for league's sake is kind of pointless.
I mean, it's fine. It's just it's no different than like a pickup basketball league or something where there's just a crappy trophy at the end of it. Sometimes people want to play for just pride. I think that's fine.
Intrinsic versus extrinsic reward systems. But we're
going down a game design rabbit hole. So, Ryan Felton at F3R... No.
Wait, can we just talk about game design a little bit longer?
Ryan Felton.
Ryan got his name said like 50 F3R times.
F3R underscore Fluffy. This is a more general question for all of you. Is it possible to play Rafik without people immediately targeting? Should we take a vote?
Can I just field this one? No, it's not.
Well, let's
next
take
question.
A vote. Let's say, Sean says no. I'll say no. Phil?
No.
Josh?
Yes. It's really, really easy. The person to your left has to be playing Narset, and the person to your right has to be playing Perforos.
So as long as every other commander is also equally ridiculous, then, yeah, you can go for it.
You know, what's funny is, like, we have Rafik deck in our playgroup, but I don't even think it's particularly like targeted more than a lot of the other decks, because the more you play, the more you realize like it's really going to be the person. They're going to tune their deck to a certain level, and whatever commander they've got out, you're probably going to be more like, I don't know, Alex plays really good decks. I don't care what that commander is. I got to watch out for him.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think Jason had a few comments on one of the last episodes where, you know, he said you could pretty much play Rafik and claim it's not a deadly deck, but
and then we'll
we're
find out after we
deadly.
Pick the corpse of your deck after.
I think if you do sit down in a group of strangers, like if that's the setting, and Nate, you probably know more about this than me, then there are certain commanders that will draw hate in a vacuum, depending on if that's all you know and you see
if you see Narset, kill it.
Yeah. If you see a Rafik deck and then the other guy's got a, you know, Safi Eric's daughter deck and the other dude's got a, you know, I don't know, some
pirate tribal.
Yeah, exactly. And then the last person has Athreos, you know, you're probably going after the Rafik guy. Like, that's just the most scary thing. But I think there are a lot of generals that sit in that, like Shroom or, you know, Caridor can be scary, and there's a whole bunch that probably you could look across the table and be like, I don't know which one of those. They are all scary.
Yeah.
I think the reason people get afraid of Rafiki is it tends to go from out of nowhere, boom, you're dead.
Yeah.
And that's why people don't like it. Nobody likes to be killed. Like, I personally don't mind the game just ending, but for just me to be taken out in early game by that sort of thing and then be sitting watching out for everyone else play for an hour, that sucks. And that's why people don't like it. That's why I don't think Perforce is a massive problem, because at least he's an equal opportunities hater.
At least he kills everybody.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Games end fast with Perforos.
Yeah. And yeah, if the game ends faster, then you can play more games.
Maybe I'm just screwed up in the head, because it doesn't matter to me at all getting knocked out early or not. It's just, am I the last person standing or am I not? Like, it's a little bit binary. Not that I only play to win,
I always play to, my aim is to come in second, because then I've played, even if I lose when I'm the second to last player in, I've played as much magic as I can in that game. And that's what I really actually just want to do, is turn cardboard sideways. And
we have this player in our play group named Craig, and he has like 35 commander decks, and like literally 9 of them are infect decks. So if you have that mindset, then you're just going to be not happy like a third of the time, because he's got to kill somebody on turn 5 or 6 with infect, you know. So
that's where politics comes in, to make sure it's not you, though, isn't it?
Yeah, trust me, it doesn't always work. It works a lot, but there are going to be just times where you're the one, like, because he's going to roll his dice, and sometimes your number comes up, and once he's said it best himself, he's like, I'm a dog, and once I got my jaws on your throat, I can't pick another target. I gotta stick on that one, my first target. So
next question.
DFYFF, parentheses, Kyle Lynn, and I'll let you infer the Twitter handle. How many Tims does a Tim need to be tapped, untapped to ping someone to death?
Oh, well, 39 times, obviously. I guess unless they're playing a Loro, in which case, oh man, you're in huge trouble.
Yeah,
that's, I think the question you wanted to ask was, how many Tims is a Tim tap tip to the ping tap Tim tap Tim?
Nice try.
The answer is cast Prophet of Krufix.
If only all the questions didn't have that answer. Next question: if you were to build a mere tribal deck, what would be the commander?
Oh, that's really interesting. I think there's a couple ways to go. I think I would probably go 5
Progenitus.
Yeah, I would probably go 5 color Progenitus, and because a lot of the mirror tap for mana, so that'd be one way to go. The other way to go is just do like Memnarch.
And Memnarch would have been my suggestion.
Yeah, those are the two ways, right? All the colors or just blue. So
yeah,
because there's no reason to really go like Karn and just go colorless and. Yeah, I think I would, of course, tend
towards... Colorless is tough.
I think I would, of course, tend towards 5 color.
If I was going colorless, I would take Kozilek.
Right, but there's no real reason to do that over just Memnarch, who's just going to be better than those most of the time and still give you Cyclonic Rift and Consecrated Sphinx and, you know, Swan Song and awesome blue cards in general.
Blue.
Next question.
Drew Bentley at Quad Nines. Would you rather play one game for 1.5 hours or 3 games for 30 minutes each?
That's interesting. I don't really care, honestly. Right. As long as I'm playing Magic for 1.5 hours total, that seems pretty good to me.
Cool. Amen to that, brother.
Bonus, who is your favorite Planeswalker?
Oh, I answered this for you guys. What did I say, Phil? Garrick, Wildspeaker.
Good one.
I like anything that's like ramp and does something else, or card draw and does something else. So I guess my other one would maybe be Chandra Pyromaster, but I don't like red that much, so it's Garrick.
Okay.
We've extended an invitation to your co-host to appear, where I think we might talk about red once or twice.
You might. Jimmy does love him some red.
Yay!
Oh, here's another listener.
Is this Sean Watson, or is this a question for Sean Watson?
That's listener it's Sean Watson.
Listener Sean Watson.
Just how good is Odell Beckham Jr.?
I don't really know. Did you watch?
Me neither.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I didn't watch the Combine or anything. Like, I know that he's supposed to be good.
All right.
Sports.
I know,
go
he got
sports
me with
team.
His giant with his football question. I was like, I know the name, and I might have watched one college game. I have no idea. I have no idea. He's supposed to be good.
Oh God,
Richard Blakely at Kirito 552.
Where'd he play? LSU.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah, that's all I know. That's all I know about him. He played at LSU, and I think he was supposed to be.
Now he's up at Big Blue.
Yeah. I figured he must be for the Giants. I didn't even know that until the question came through, but I was like, well, if Sean's asking it.
Oh, he did the greatest
go
catch
Richard.
Ever. Anyway, go Richard, sorry.
Do you have any Elish Norn EDS tips?
Oh.
Okay, sorry.
Who?
Oh, Elish Norn?
Do you have any Elish Norn EDH tips? Any cards that synergize with her well? There's an editorial comment here that says no.
Are we talking Elish Norn as a commander? Or just Elish Norn
in
your deck?
I guess so.
Well, if Elish Norn's your commander, good luck to you, sir. Tokens, obviously, are great. I also would do a lot of the board wipes that affect creatures with power less than or greater than, you know, like Austere Command and Retribution of the Meek and things like that. Although, because what you're going to do is you're going to shrink your opponent's creatures and grow yours, so you can do, you know, some weird things that you couldn't normally do as far as like hitting all their creatures and not yours. But really, Elish Norn is a mono white commander. So if she's your commander, you're just going to run a normal mono white deck because there's just not a lot of directions to go with that deck. And it's mostly going to be tokens.
So you'll probably want Nahiri and Krovax Ascendant Hero.
There you go.
So my Elish Norn tip, she can't be a commander, but she's one of your 99. Elish Norn and Dovescape.
Oh, Dovescape. Yeah. Dovescape's just crazy
that's
in general.
Brutal.
I mean, if Elish Norn's in your deck, then it's a lot better. Because if I'm just sitting there staring at Elish Norn, I can calculate for it. I can know how much mana it takes to cast her, when you might cast her. I can play around it a whole lot easier. I don't think she makes a great commander also because she costs 7 and forces you into mono white. And, you know, if you're in mono white, you want a lower casting cost general because one of the things white's really bad at is mana ramp.
Yeah, awful.
Land tax.
That's not ramp.
Not
mana
it's
ramp.
Not ramp.
That's mana fixing.
And you don't need fixing. You're in mono white. It guarantees you're going to hit your land drops. But I think, it's card draw really for white, which white is also bad at. I think mono white is one of the worst mono colors you can be in.
Agreed.
Legions of Darien pilots have just started weeping.
Take that, mono white.
It's not that there aren't some good mono white decks. I just think even the best mono white decks would have trouble with really good other decks. Whereas, mono black is pretty strong. You know, even the Duretti deck can be really strong. Titania can be really strong. It can put up a fight against almost any deck. But there are certain decks that mono white's just you're never going to beat.
Yeah, mono black, mono blue, they're the best mono colors. In my opinion.
All right, so Nate, let's start a lightning round. Let's just ask the question and give Josh, I don't know, what do you think, Josh? Ten words?
I'm not going to count, but I'll be fast.
Would you rather see a well-written MTG movie or a well-written 10-episode TV show?
TV show on HBO.
And he wouldn't watch the end of it?
Well, if it was good, I would. It won't be good.
Which two famous...
I'm sorry, guys.
It could be
it won't
good.
Be good. Oh. I'm sorry to everyone out there. It's got about a 4% chance of being good.
Which two famous people would you want to teach/play EDH with for a month?
For a month?
One male, one female.
One male, one female. This is hard. I think probably Einstein. Wait, are we talking live now or any person in history?
Doesn't say. Let's break the time barrier.
Okay, Einstein, and I'm going to say Cleopatra.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right.
Joan of Arc.
Joan of Arc's pretty good. That's a pretty good one. Yeah.
All right.
Still going to go with Cleopatra.
It's a bit
couldn't understand what she's going to say, though.
Have you ever made a deck that you regretted playing? Example, the game went on too long, or there were complicated board states and the like.
I built a chaos deck, and I even talked about it on the show, and I was really excited for it. And then what I learned is that the chaos deck actually just creates a lot of like really unfun games, because it creates all these states where I can't win and nobody else can win, right. And there's no real way, clear path to victory, so it ends up being kind of not fun.
What's the best political trick you never get to use?
You could say politrick.
Politrick. What's the best politrick?
The best politrick that I never get to use. I mean, I use them all.
I'll bet.
Yeah, he's a master of politics.
I don't know if there's one that I never get to use. You just, you know.
The best one he never gets to use is the one you don't even know about. The greatest trick the devil ever pulled, etc.
You're playing against it now.
He's the prime minister of politics in EDH.
It's pretty funny. He's the president. There's only one prime minister. And sadly, it's David Cameron. Oh, talk about politics.
Are you working on any new decks?
Yeah, actually, I don't want to spoil it, but I'm sort of working on my first like Vorthosi deck.
Oh, any?
Because it's the one thing I haven't really tried. So,
any hints to the colors?
No, but it's probably a little ways from being done because, of course, I bit off a little more than I could chew when I decided to try it. So it may evolve anyway. But that's what I'm working on.
Are you getting tribal?
I'm not going to give anything away.
That's a yes. Okay. Is there a deck you looked at and wanted to build? Is there a commander?
Oh, yeah. All the time. Every time I see somebody's deck, I'm like, I want to build that deck. You know, I see somebody's awesome Carador deck, and I'd be like, I want that. Or, you know, just anything. Like, Phil's got a pretty cool Mimeoplasm deck that I was like, when I saw that, I was like, I want to do that stuff. So that happens to me constantly.
All right. You're stuck on a different plane. Which planeswalker do you trust to get you home safely?
Good question.
That's a really tough one. Yeah. Well, not Liliana, not Garrick.
I've seen a photo of you with Liliana. I'm not sure you'll get home.
Chandra, she seems a little erratic. Who else we got? Jace, no, don't trust him. Nissa's going to like release the Eldrazi. That seems like I don't like her that much now.
Aww.
Gideon, maybe. A Johnny.
Yeah, Johnny will help you out. He's that kind of guy.
I could trust that guy.
He's
yeah.
the white hat.
Yeah, that's a gimme.
Just don't get him angry.
Right. No, I'd be totally nice to him the whole time. I would not call him a jerk for playing Blood Moon.
If he played Blood Moon, he'd get all vengeant.
Oh. If any legendary creature could be a planeswalker, who would you pick?
Oh. This is a good one. Any legendary creature could be a planeswalker. Who would I pick? I mean, it would have to be a five-color one, because we don't have a five-color planeswalker. I definitely don't want to do Slivers, so let's not do that.
Progenitus?
That's what I'm leaning towards. Progenitus Planeswalker seems like... I don't know what he would do, but it seems like it would be awesome. I'm with you. Progenitus.
Yeah.
All right.
That was a good question, Andrew Mullen. Very good question.
Yes, very good questions. Our listeners once again saved the show.
What? Oh, Phil, you're not going to be all like, no, duh.
Was that jerky?
Yes.
Being Americans, I presume you're all eating jerky all the time. So, yeah.
Of course we are. After we have shot and killed the creature that we made the jerky from. And I do say creature because we make jerky from everything.
Do you then coat that jerky in chocolate and then put some frosting on top of that chocolate? For flavor.
After we salt it heavily, yes. Not
Sean,
just smoked jerky.
Sean, don't lie. It's delicious.
So is English bacon, apparently. You guys don't like that.
No, I like it. Oh, you know what's one of my favorite things in the world is English breakfast.
Oh, so I'm going to go make
one now. Wait.
English breakfast is the best.
Yeah, it is pretty cool.
Yeah, fried bread? Are you kidding? How did Americans not invent fried bread? Probably because the English already had invented it, but seriously, they fry the bread. It's so simple, but brilliant.
Oh, it is good.
Well, French toast is better than fried bread.
No, please, what?
What are you talking French
toast,
about?
French toast is just, they just have a better public relations department.
Honestly true, in England, a lot of people won't call it French toast. We call it gypsy toast. Just because we don't want to eat
anything
French.
We call it freedom toast in America.
Freedom toast. Yep. Along with our freedom fries.
Like the freedom fries.
That was only for a short period of time.
And we cover it in chocolate and mayonnaise.
But sometimes we call it the more descriptive eggy bread. But, you know, that's less imaginative.
I don't think Sean really wants to get into a food argument here, though.
We'll lose.
Yeah, unfortunately. But you do have some very... You have a few very good items, though.
Yes.
Sadly. Shepherd's pie. Shepherd's pie is, like, also brilliant.
Have you had Yorkshire puddings?
And yeah, spotted dick?
Well, who hasn't had that?
All right, so it looks like we have a message of the week this week, too.
Yes.
We don't have an end step. We have a message of the week.
Oh, I'm excited to hear it.
There's a web series that's been going on for a few years, and it's run by some game designers, some professional game designers. And this episode is about toxicity in game environments. And the episode focuses specifically on online environments, but what they're saying can apply to face-to-face relations. And I think it really speaks to what Josh's message is in this conversation.
What's the name of the web series?
Extra Credits. And we'll post the link in our show notes.
Very cool. Right. Can I find it on YouTube?
Yes.
All right. Sweet. I will definitely check it out.
Very nice.
Yeah, they're quite good. I've watched a couple of their episodes and enjoyed them all. So any messages that you'd like to share, Josh?
No, just thanks a lot for having me on, you guys. I'm really glad that you guys have started up this podcast and it's going so well. And, you know, your quality level's been really high. And I hope you guys keep it rolling because we need more content out there and more really good content. So thanks for having me on. Thanks for having a very cool show. And hopefully we'll have you guys on our show here soon.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. You've supported us a great deal. And when I said friend of the show announcing your appearance here, I truly meant that. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, man.
Been a genuine Yeehaw. Pleasure, Josh. Genuine pleasure.
Yeah, it's been fun, man. I enjoy a spirited discussion. I think most of our listeners know that, but you know, I like a good debate, so
yeah. I think it's important at the end of the day that you can have these, and I'm a bit of a talker, as you may have noticed, and it's good to have these conversations, like, well, not face to face, but verbally, so people don't think, hey, those two guys hate each other.
Right, exactly. It's. I think it's a good lesson too. Is like, even if you don't 100% agree, that doesn't. Again, it's actually the exact message, right?
Yeah.
Not that we don't, but even if you're arguing with somebody, like, you can still respect that somebody has their opinion and they have reasons for their opinion, and that you can respect even if you don't agree with that opinion.
Absolutely.
And again, I do mostly agree with your opinion, so that's not even the case here.
Yeah, I think 99% agree with each other.
No. Quick, a listener question.
So about that, no, just kidding.
All right, this is where we say thanks to everybody, all of our listeners, for downloading and listening to this episode. We love to hear from each of you, and I hope you'll take the time to contact us. And especially, and Josh, you're much better at this than we are, and asking the listeners to give us a 5-star rating on iTunes. It really helps us, like you always say. Please, it makes us feel good reading these reviews. Please. Yes, this is a segment we sometimes call Phil Begs for
Stars.
Phil Begs
for
Self-Esteem.
You need to go to iTunes. You need to go to the review section. You need to give them a 5-star review. You need to actually type in a review. That does help them. What happens is the way that iTunes like ranks things when you search for them has to do with listener reviews and the amount of stars they give them. It also matters on how Watsi deals with any given content creator. So if you like this podcast and you want them to keep like having opportunities to get product, which they can pass on to you, and to get things like preview cards and to just be seen and out there, like, this is a way you can really support the show. So go to iTunes, 5-star review, type in something nice. It takes you 30 seconds. You just spent 2 hours. You just got 2 free hours of entertainment. Give these guys 30 seconds.
Wow, that's awesome.
Oh, thanks, Josh. You're so nice. Josh.
We're going to isolate that and make that a ringtone. And so in case people came to us by way of the internets, but not ways we expected, you can find us at commanderandmtg.com. That's our website. Our email is cast@commanderandmtg. On Facebook, we're this is going to be a complete surprise. Commander and MTG on Facebook.
Oh my God.
I know. On Twitter, it gets even crazier. We're at Commander and MTG. How did we do that? Individually, on Twitter, I'm at KetJack.
Sorry.
I thought that was Nate. I thought that was Nate for a second.
Yeah, Nate does occasionally break into open weeping.
He's not crying, he's giggling. Ain't ya? Yes. Funny. Listen to their funny voices.
So Sean is at Copain26 on Twitter.
I am at Copain26.
I'm at Mr. Plorg.
And Josh, you are?
I'm at Josh Lee Kwai. You can find the Command Zone at Command Cast, or you can find the episodes at on rocketjump.com.
That's right.
Oh, we're also on YouTube. You can figure out where to find us there. I don't know the URL.
You got all fancy animations, too.
Yeah, you do.
Really, those are really awesome. Pretty.
We didn't even talk about that. Oh, no, we need to go another hour just talking about that.
No, that's fine. Just go to YouTube, look up the Command Zone. We have a bunch of animated backgrounds that we spend a lot of time on. Hopefully you like them.
Ta-da. And you should check our show notes for the links, because all of this will be in there. So our theme song was created for the podcast by Mr. Nate Burgess.
That's me.
Our logo was created for the podcast by Mr. Picto, with assistance from Kelly DeLuca. I don't know who she knows, but she helped out. You can find more art from Mr. Picto by going to mrpicto.co.uk. And special thanks to our tech whizzes Jesse Thompson and Graham Frank, and to Justin Bunnell for his service base. Now, we have a tradition where we ask our guest, Josh, to kind of either cue the music, or I think it's much more appropriate for you to sort of maybe take us out.
All right, everybody. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.
Peace.
How's it?
And that's our show.
How's it? Yeah!